Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And so I says to Mabel, I says, well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Slightly Something Else, the show in which Yahtzee and I talk about whatever we want, dancing around Dark Souls all the time.
Certainly do. And perhaps as a measure to avoid getting into Dark Souls yet again, we've decided to talk about quirky games, not horrible, violent games full of misery and death. Nice, cheerful, charming, quirky games.
I like it.
With a specific one that I had in mind.
Okay.
Which was Earthbound on the SNES, which I feel is quite an important game in the history of video games, and perhaps I should say indie games. It had a rocky open, Earthbound, especially in the West. It didn't sell very well. I think it sold like 100,000 units in the US. And not for want of trying, Nintendo of America were really like pushing it. They tried to do this whole campaign that centered around a scratch and sniff book, which was full of very unpleasant smells.
Wait, this was a real thing?
Yes, this was a real thing. And it didn't really work out.
Yeah. Sounds kind of terrible.
It's only really in retrospect that Earthbound became a cult classic.
Well, I think part of the cult classic status is the fact that it was a mythical find. It was a very hard game to get a hold of in the States.
Well, probably because no one wanted a game box stinking up their living room with its scratch and sniff card.
Right, right.
I only ever played it emulated. I first heard about it back in the earlier days of the internet when I was hanging around like indie game message boards. I used to hang around a site called Home of the Underdogs.
Okay.
There was a site focusing on like abandonware and lesser known indie titles.
And
it was hang around there that I was directed to this game on the SNES from many years ago, which is quite unique in the world of Japanese RPGs. And it is a Japanese RPG because it's about teenagers using the power of friendship to kill God. But everything else about it is very unique. It has a almost primitive art style, I'd say.
Yes, very primitive art style. Like the world map is very reminiscent of like the cartoon edges of a Super Mario world. The character design is hyper simplistic. I want to say that's all purposeful, though.
It always gave me a Charlie Brown vibe.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I think the original intention... Hang on, I've got the Wikipedia article up here. They wanted to create an RPG with a difference. An RPG that wasn't, you know, set in the standard sort of RPG setting, but in a modern setting that explored some modern concepts as well as, you know, teenagers using the power of friendship to kill God. Of course, it wasn't the first game. First game was a game called Mother on the NES.
Right, because, of course, we know it as Earthbound, but over in Japan it was Mother 2.
Yes.
Right.
And it only really like became a cult classic with Earthbound. Mother was a bit lesser, I'd say.
Oh,
it was almost a prototype, I'd say. It's fine to start with Earthbound.
Not Mother 3, which did come to the Game Boy Advance, right?
Yeah, I don't think it ever got a Western release.
I want to say it got a very limited Western release.
There's a fan translation that took quite a few years to come out that everyone was hyping about for a while. But I don't think there was ever an official release of Mother 3 in the West.
Interesting. Oh, you are correct. Japan only, Mother 3.
Make it all the weirder that they made the protagonist of Mother 3 one of the characters in Smash Brothers.
Only because, like, people know of Earthbound only through the hype. It's amazing the amount of characters people know from Earthbound, the majority of them having never played Earthbound.
Yeah, it's funny that. A lot of them know them from Smash Brothers, of course.
Oh, sure.
It's a weird anomaly, almost. It's a lesser-known Nintendo franchise, but they just keep bringing it into Smash Brothers for some reason. I can think of better-known Nintendo franchises that took slightly longer to get into Smash Brothers.
Do you think, like, the creators of Smash Brothers were just a fan and were like, we're already doing something weird here. Let me get Ness in there.
It's possible. Maybe did I hear somewhere that Itoi, the like designer of Earthbound, worked on Smash Brothers?
Oh, maybe. And so it's just like, hey,
I might be pulling that right out of my supple and prolific ass.
So supple.
I don't know, but maybe someone on the inside had an affection for Earthbound as a series, because as you say, it's a cult classic. Earthbound, right. It's not your daddy's JRPG.
Well, I think like that's the heart of this topic here is, besides it being known for not being available anywhere, it is widely regarded as like your first delve into the weird game.
It's certainly a weird game. I think that's what carried a lot of its reputation. It starts off just weird in a sort of unconventional for JRPGs, but children's book sort of weird. Like, you're a kid, you wake up in the middle of the night, there's an asteroid has fallen near your home, and you go to it and you get pulled into this whole conflict with this evil monster, alien monster from the future or the past or whatever. But that's in the background at first. At first, it's just this quirky adventure where you're like a bunch of Charlie Brown style kids exploring like small town America. You help out the local jazz band. You can go to the arcade and like defeat a local gang.
Right.
And it's all sort of, in the first area in 1-8, the first city, there's still this sort of air of like Americana, like cutesy Norman Rockwell-y sort of vibe. Then it starts to take a turn for the weird when it introduces like a weird Ku Klux Klan style cult that worships the color blue.
Perfectly
normal. That
you have
to rescue one of your party members from. That's where they start introducing the weird elements. And then what happens next? Then you go to like a city where it's like being taken over by zombies and ghosts.
Well, see, to me, like, that's why the art style always seemed very purposeful to me, is to set up the expectations of being a simple kiddie game. So when they started dropping all the weird and the quirky, it had a juxtaposition and it had an impact.
Yeah, it starts quirky and like kiddie, and it sort of transitions into horror by the end.
Yes.
Which is a strange path, which is what makes it such a cult classic and unique to talk about.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and I think like much like any good cult classic, it's really the thing that makes Earthbound endure throughout the years is stuff like this, is just the stories. As people hear these stories about a Charlie Brown, it's like if Charlie Brown all of a sudden, you know, dipped into Twin Peaks. And people hear that story and it builds up this reputation. That being said, it's also a very good game if you like, you know, turn-based RPGs.
It's a bit clunky in the mechanics. Like, you have to put up with a lot of slow scrolling text boxes in combat.
Sure.
Like, you swung at the enemy. The enemy was hit for such and such. And every action has a little text box. It's not terribly visual as combat goes.
No. Oh, God, no. No, you don't even see your character. Like, you know, Final Fantasy, you know, at least you saw your characters, like, on screen doing the whole, like, bounce back and forth while they were fighting. This, you don't even see your characters on screen. Though, if I'm remembering correctly, Earthbound also had a fantastic RPG system which was as you leveled up, if you were a significantly higher level than lower level monsters, you just won the fight automatically.
Yeah, and it's a shame more RPGs don't do that. That's a nice catharsis feature.
Right? Well, and just really cuts down on that grind, because you jump in and it says, you won! You did it!
Yeah, you won. Why even bother going through the rigmarole? You are so ahead of these enemies, it's not even funny. Let's just move on.
It's mathematically impossible for you to lose. We get that. Let's move on. And I think that's really fun.
I think what I like about Earthbound is that it has a very effortless air to it. Like if all the features feels like they're not, like the designers are sort of taking their hands off and they're letting it just spin by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to like actively make something that looks like you're not putting effort into it. Like for example, at the start of the game, like they ask you to like provide the names for all the characters, but also the names of the name of like your main attack.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite thing? The game asks, and you just enter the name of it, and obviously you enter vagina. That's just what you do when you're 12. And so, not long into the game, you unlock the Psy Vagina ability that causes massive amounts of damage to the enemy. And you have to enter your favorite food as well. So obviously, you put vagina in there as well, and then you're back to your mum's house.
Mm-hmm.
and say, well, now why don't you eat some vagina and go back to bed?
And many giggles were had, I guess, like on the subject of effortlessness.
Well, when I say effortlessness, I mean like a lack of control over the direction of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, To me,
a sense of abandon, let's say.
A sense of abandon. Sure. I mean, like, I remember the early part of the game clearly, because I know I tried to play it a few times before, you know, playing more of it. And I would always stop in the early areas because in the early areas, like, this is a game that forced you to talk to literally everyone.
Mm.
And sometimes you couldn't progress the story until you talked to the one right person who you didn't necessarily feel like talking to. So yes, it definitely is a little nebulous.
That's also a good word. But I think at its core, there's an anchor in that game. And the anchor is the fact that at any time you can go back to your mum's house.
Mm-hmm.
And your mum goes, I'm sure you've had lots of great adventures. Now eat some vagina and scoot off to bed, and then you can get back to your adventures when you're done. And you save the game by calling your dad.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd say the central theme of the game is like always like coming back to a place of comfort at the end.
Hmm.
No matter what Lovecraftian horrors you're facing towards the end of things.
Sure. I like that. I think that's really fun, but I think like delving a little bit into the broader subject of like the quirky game, the effortlessness helps there in Earthbound as well, because it never seems like you never see their notes. Like it never seems like they're forcing these weird things on you. It just all seems weird, but real within the universe they built.
Yeah, you go with the flow, because it's introduced slowly.
Yes, but you know there are other games, more recent games, that try to be, you know, weird and quirky, but it's kind of like just hucked at you.
Yeah, that's the problem, that because Earthbound, being a cult classic, has been a very influential game,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get into its like games most known for being influenced by Earthbound, mm-hmm. at some point. A lot of games don't only really remember that it was quirky or that it was mad and random and weird things happened. They forget that it had that anchor, that it started off where you're just a kid in a small town dealing with small town issues,
mm-hmm.
and how it like earns the quirkiness by building to it.
Ooh, that's a great word there. It earns the quirkiness. Yes. It sets up the reality, and you can only be quirky if you have a base reality to then start tweaking.
Exactly. You need the contrast. Mm. I mean, we played a game recently called Everhood, which is in the stable of Earthbound-inspired quirky games.
That's right, that's right.
But that was just focusing more on the psychedelic aspects of Earthbound, which, again, was something Earthbound worked up to. Mm-hmm. And there are some very psychedelic moments in that game. If you like the combat, a lot of the time, the combat, they go for a weird wibbly-wobbly background and sort of trippy music.
Yes. Or, like, what about that town made entirely of neon?
Yeah.
I remember.
Moonside.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah, it was sort of like an alternate dimension version of one of the cities you go to. Mm-hmm. And that's probably like peak psychedelia. Well, maybe like Magicant, which is like a dream world you visit late in the game. Might be the peak psychedelic part of that game.
Like, is that where you go inside your own dream? It's been a while since I've played through the whole thing, but
Yeah, thinking about it, there is quite a few references to the Beatles in the game as well. So you can definitely see the psychedelic influence that the Beatles had there as well.
Sure, sure. Many Strawberry Fields, I'm sure, were had forever. But the, you know, thinking about this whole, like, the quirkiness being earned and thinking about, like, what makes the game such a cult classic, so memorable. To me, I always think it boils down to the characters, you know, like that's, you know, like Ness as our protagonist, I suppose he would have to be, you know, like everyone else feeds off of Ness and, you know, all the villagers you can talk to and their bizarre ass dialogue, you know, your kung fu friend, your all the people you meet by contrast to what you perceive to be normal is what gives it that air of silliness.
Ness is a very standard sort of anchor character that you get as protagonists often in Japanese games. Mm-hmm. Usually they don't talk much. Usually they're presented as, you know, an every person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They have some incredible secret power. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, everyone just instantly befriends them. They just have this inexplicable charisma. They're just very good listeners.
You know, it's called plot charisma. Is we have to move the story forward. Much like plot armor, some characters have plot charisma, and that's okay. Because we need the group to get together, Yahtzee. That's how it works.
But yes, as you say, it's the characters that make it. Mm-hmm. But your party members all sort of blur together after a while. Once they join your party, they all become silent as well, I think is the point. But you run into all these like weird characters. They get into random battles with hippies. With like rock music playing in the background.
Because why not?
You run into a man who is a dungeon. Dungeon Man. And you go inside Dungeon Man and explore the dungeon he's made for you.
That's nice. That's nice. How much of the quirkiness do we, like, especially like thinking about the characters and thinking about the very bizarre dialogue that they would have? That's something I definitely remember is, you know, you go up to a random person, like in a hotel or on the street, and the things they say to you are incredibly bizarre. How much of that was intentional and how much of that was translation?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Mm. I mean, there's a lot of Japanese games that have that interesting effect where you just don't know what the hell is going to come out of any character's mouth when you press on them because Japan is a different culture.
Right. And translating Japanese to English, a lot of the context is removed and or distorted, which is fine.
Well, it's hard to say because there's a lot of stuff that's quirky, like absent dialogue.
Oh yeah,
like the fact that you fight hippies and insane middle-aged women who have gone mad and want to have a fight,
right? Which is all perfectly fine.
And the fact that if you get lost in a dungeon, you can use an exit mouse, which is a mouse specially trained to take you to the exit.
I just think that's fun. I think they were having a lot of fun when they made the game.
Well, it certainly seems fun. It certainly seems, I mean, looking at the Wikipedia article here, and it says here that Itoi deliberately designed the Mother games with what he termed reckless wildness.
Ooh.
Where he would offer ideas that encouraged his staff to contribute new ways of portraying scenes in the video game medium.
Oh. Interesting. And
he said he saw the titles foremost as games and not big scenario scripts. So I guess that means he was making it up as he went along.
Beautiful. I think that's beautiful. And I always am a fan of a kind of standard... A standard trope, even giving a slight tweak in concept, you know, kind of like instead of using a rope to escape a dungeon, an exit mouse. I think that's really fun and you know, thinking to characters, thinking to world, it's all about having a unique personality.
Yeah. And I think in video games especially, quirkiness needs to be present in the mechanics as well.
Ooh, okay. All right.
And what I remember most clearly about Earthbound is that it had a mechanic that very sort of literalized the user interface in that you had a health meter that like gradually rolled down every time you took a hit.
Right, right.
But if for whatever reason you were able to finish the battle before the counter had finished rolling down, it would stop because the battle had stopped and you wouldn't lose any more health. And there was specific monsters where their like final fuck you attack was to self destruct and like do like 999 damage. Mm. And you just had to quickly skip through the end dialogue of the battle before you died.
right. That's fun.
And you can see a sort of extension of the idea of literalizing the user interface in Undertale.
Whoa, what a
which I guess we were gonna
segue.
Get to. I guess we're going to get to at some point, which is probably the exemplar of the genre of games I would consider to be Earthbound's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Earthbound has inspired a bunch of like indie creators. Lisa, the Painful, Lisa, the Joyful have a very Earthboundy vibe, although they're a bit more nihilistic. I think Undertale captures that feel better than anything else.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
captures the feel of combining that relatable, cheerful, charming, quirky core against serious themes, serious apocalyptic, like almost horror elements, and bouncing them off each other to create an emotionally cathartic experience. I sound like a very dreary critic type person. Would you say you agree with my very clever strings of long words, Jack?
Basically, your detailed analysis highlights both the positive artistic elements of Undertale and their clear lineage to its predecessors that it pays homage to in Earthbound.
And can I just interrupt you there and say,
oh, absolutely.
I like the bit with spaghetti in it.
Bravo. A masterclass in quirkiness right there. You did it. So the reason why Undertale was able to so wonderfully take the mantle from Earthbound, or at least, you know, point to the mantle and say, yes, this is what we're doing, is because they're also doing kind of their own thing. All of their characters, all of their mechanics, all of their world is unique to Undertale, and it's all wrapped up in its own vision of the world, much like what Earthbound did.
Yeah, it's definitely doing its own thing, but with the same sort of free-spirited, hands-off sort of approach to letting it go where it wants to.
Yeah.
But tying back around as well, really well.
Well, and it utilizes these core aspects of Earthbound, you know, the dry artistic aspects that we were just talking about. All of these core aspects of, you know, setting up the universe, tweaking slightly over time, having interesting characters who are able to exist and give funny dialogue, having a unique combat system integrated in with the world and the theme, all of these things it does while not directly aping off of Earthbound.
You know what I think they both do? You know, the vibe both of them give me is that they both feel like a kid's game, but not in the sense of being made for kids. They feel like they were made by kids on the playground, making up ridiculous scenarios as they go along, and occasionally indulging in weird, horrific concepts because the kids got left unsupervised and watched Event Horizon one weekend. It's definitely got that sort of free-spirited vibe of like a kid's imaginary adventure.
Yes. Well, and that's something that we can really only find in indie games now. And, you know, in the early days of Nintendo, it felt unrestrained. It felt like it felt like there was not a boss telling them no, which is really important.
I think that's definitely the sort of environment in Shigeru Miyamoto, at least, wanted to create in Nintendo back in those days. Mm-hmm.
Right, and it worked sometimes, and it didn't work other times.
Well, I guess at the time, you could argue it didn't work with Earthbound. Because I think Miyamoto gave Itoi, like, free rein, because, you know, he had a good feeling. He trusted in the guy. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time, the result kind of left a lot of people, like, confused as to what the fuck this was all about.
We, as gamers, just may not have been ready for it. Is that a thing? Was it ahead of its time? Because it was taking game mechanics and twisting them enough, but as a culture, we weren't yet integrated enough into all these mechanics.
It's possible. It's certainly an askance take on established themes. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people were turned off for it from the way it looked, at least early on. It actually came out fairly late in the SNES era. Mm-hmm. I mean, 16-bit graphics was quite a bit beyond what Earthbound was doing at that point. And since it was still, you know, in the developmental times of video games, a lot of graphics were very important to a lot of people.
Oh, that's interesting. It'd be very interesting if that's why people turned away from it. But doesn't that also at least a little bit prove my point? Because Undertale, of course, does not look super great.
Well, no, and I think that's part of how Earthbound founded this legacy of like quirky indie, apparently not much work put into it, but it actually there has been quite a lot of work put into it. Mm-hmm. Sort of feel,
yeah.
And the visuals are part of that because the Earthbound was saying, hey, if you got weird ideas but you can't draw very well, it can still work out. And Undertale certainly embraced that.
Absolutely. The idea is greater than the art, which I want to say as gamers in general, we have all internalized now. Graphics aren't necessarily the most important thing for most of us. I'm going to say hopefully at least. Anymore.
It's only much easier to recreate that sort of amateurish art style if you're making a game with a small team or just by yourself.
Right.
And when you are making a game with a small team or just by yourself, it's much easier to go out on a limb, to be a bit auteur with it, to indulge yourself. And I think if you want to recreate the feel of Earthbound or Undertale, the key is not to try to specifically rip off its themes or its methods. It's just to try to indulge yourself.
Well, and it's the core. It's you know, yes. I mean, what you're saying is correct, but like to be more specific, yeah, you don't want to make a game where, you know, little kids are solving a meteor mystery while doing quirky RPG stuff. You want to take the kind of the, how do you call these? Like the abstract game pillars, not the actual game pillars, the abstract game pillars.
Yeah. I think people will know what you mean.
Hopefully, because I can't come up with the words, you know, the idea of taking established gameplay tropes, slowly turning them on their head to create a weird world, which we get in other games. We get in plenty of other games.
Yeah.
Even
there's an innocence to it. It's like, hey, what if we did this? What if we just didn't die if the health bar hasn't run out properly? What if we just didn't bother to program that?
Ooh, could you imagine? I'm even thinking like even bigger video games. This is obviously not a quirky game, but this is a critically acclaimed game like a BioShock, of slowly twisting with the idea of player control.
That's certainly. Are we saying Earthbound was like the progenitor of all kinds of deconstructive games?
Ooh.
The whole attitude of video game mechanics and their deconstruction?
That is what I'm saying. That is what I'm going out on a limb and saying. I'm not saying that that was their intention. But thinking of these invisible game pillars, that is something that it brought to the table. And so you could logically say, like, oh, I really like that in Earthbound. I really like the fact that they took the established turn-based RPG thing and tweaked it a little bit. What if we applied that to this and this and this game?
I'm just looking at Earthbound's Wikipedia article and its influence section, mm-hmm. or legacy.
Ooh, okay.
And it's been officially cited as an influence on the game's Costume Quest, Undertale, and South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Okay.
Which is certainly a vibe I get. In fact, Trey Parker of South Park might have been saying that Earthbound inspired a lot of South Park generally.
Sure. I could
certainly
see that.
Has a similar vibe. The kids, the small towns, the weird flights of fancy.
I like that. I like that, and that makes an incredible amount of sense. It's the general concepts of have an established reality, slowly start tweaking that established reality. It's satire humor 101.
That's definitely something Undertale does. It establishes the reality of this fantasy world you've dropped into. And you sort of make assumptions about it at first. You're in like a dungeon, there's skeletons and monsters.
Yeah.
And you have standard RPG mechanic abilities. And then by the end of the game, it's sort of recontextualized all that. Like you're in a nuanced world and all the monsters have complicated, believable reasons for their actions. It has the appearance of being light and uncontrolled and loose, but it's actually very tightly written, Undertale.
Yeah, well, and I think that's part of that free flow nature that you're talking about is lulling people into that comfort, and then slowly you're the frog in the boiling water, right? You don't realize what's happening until it's too late.
Some people brought up Amori in the chat,
And
a lot of people have been bringing that game up to me in streams lately.
Okay.
Have you played that, Amori? It's a recent indie game that kind of looks quite a bit like Earthbound and has a similar sort of vibe,
okay.
You know, kids in like these pastel-y RPG surreal world. But I just haven't been able to get into it because I think the problem I have with it is that it just starts with the surreal world. Throws it all in your face at one go.
What's Amori spelled like?
Omori.
Ah. Do I know this game? I don't. I've never heard of this game.
Well, it's on Steam.
Okay. Yes, very, very, very simplistic style so far. I'm just looking at the art of it. Interesting. Yeah, this definitely starts, or it looks at least like it starts very weird, but is weirdness enough? That's the question, and the answer is no. The answer is no.
No, it isn't. Is not enough. I think Amori doesn't, at least first, a lot of people like have a lot of praise for it, so maybe it gets better if you play through it, but it didn't grab me because it doesn't have the anchor, it doesn't have the core
Right.
I mean, when you get right down to it, Earthbound and Undertale both can be sold with like a core couple of lines. Earthbound is, it's a quirky RPG about kids fighting a monster from space.
Mm-hmm.
Undertale is usually marketed as, it's a non-standard RPG where nobody can die.
Mm.
That's the anchor, that's sure. The hook.
Mm-hmm.
But Amori doesn't give me anything to latch on to, I suppose.
Maybe it's one of those games you just have to play. If people explain it too much, it might ruin the hook. It might ruin the thing that makes it special. I'm not saying that either way, but
maybe.
That's always maybe. Possible.
I gave it a little while. I kind of didn't like the combat either.
Oh.
It's hard to feel motivated to keep at it.
Sure, and that's fine. And I think, you know, like there have been other games that have attempted to do quirky that have not been successful. I know you just recently reviewed, what was that called? Neverhood?
Everhood. There was another game called Neverhood.
Oh.
This one was Everhood.
Of course. I know for me personally, this might be controversial, but the reason I don't like No More Heroes is because I don't like Travis Touchdown as a character.
He's he's a certain spice, isn't he?
He certainly is, and I know that the attempt is to make him quirky and endearing.
I wouldn't say that was the intent with Travis Touchdown. I think you're supposed to think he's a bit of a prat.
Well, sure, but the quirkiness is supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Okay, sure, a quirky dickhead, but I always thought he erred too much on the side of dickhead for me to actually enjoy being around him.
I guess it's, there's a certain taste there.
And I guess that's the other issue that we're running into here when we talk about quirky games, when we talk about any sort of games with humor, is it's not going to land for everyone. And my question that I will impose on you is the quirk, is enjoying the quirk inherent to enjoying the game? For something like Earthbound, for something like Undertale, if you don't find it funny or amusing, are you going to have a good time?
Oh, I'd say you're going to have a bad time.
Yes.
Well, it's hard to say because it's all integrated so well. Undertale, I happen to think, is a very funny game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of laughs in it.
Sure.
But if it didn't appeal to your sense of humor, then it's hard to say. I mean, I don't have that perspective. I think it's funny. I think it's pretty heartwarming as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit in the good ending where I always well up.
Sure.
It's always the same moment as well. I've pinpointed it. The exact moment where I start welling up in the Undertale good ending.
Mm.
It's the bit... Well, I can't really say anything without spoiling.
There are some people who have still yet to play it, so yeah, we won't
spoil it. It's part of the ending.
Mm. That's like,
I mean, I might give the impression of being a cold and shameless destroyer of hopes and dreams when it comes to games, but my therapist said that I seem like quite a secretly emotional guy. And
keep it bottled down.
I've reviewed and played so many games that I do emotionally engage with a lot of them on very core level, and there are quite a lot of games where I've like just had that emotional surge when certain moments happen.
Well, and perhaps I guess what I'm trying to get to here is a game like Everhood. Is that the aspect that they're missing? Is the humor, the emotional core,
I definitely think it's missing an emotional core. Everhood.
I was thinking about that as you were talking about kind of the thing that grounded you in Earthbound is the fact that you can always go home and check in with your dad and, you know, talk to your mom and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's an emotional ground. There's a reality. And I guess that's what it all boils down to, right?
I guess that was Everhood's problem. It just didn't feel real. It didn't feel like everything had cohesion the way Undertale does.
Mm.
There wasn't... the emotional anchor. I keep saying anchor. I like the word because if you put a W on the end, it becomes a swear.
Boom. or an adjective meaning something very bad.
Exactly. So I think if we're going to summarize our point here is that quirk is something that works best when juxtaposed against something that's solid.
Yes. Yes, something that's solid.
Whether that be a solid emotional core, a solid foundation in like reality, a solid cohesive plot like what Undertale has. Just something solid.
I mean, it's
something we can rely upon.
I want to say we touched a little bit on this last week, which was like it's the idea of like a punchline is useless without the setup. You can't just say a punchline and expect it to be funny. You need the grounding. You need the setup. You need that work put into establishing a reality before you can start making it weird.
Even the most basic humor at all, like smacking someone in the face with a frying pan, wouldn't be funny without the juxtaposition against not smashing people in the face with frying pans.
Wait a minute.
Because because you don't do that in standard social settings. You don't just say, "Hello, Mrs. Jones," pang, as you greet your neighbor over the fence.
Well, I suppose. I was thinking more of like, you know, if you smacked an old lady with a frying pan, it might not resonate as much. Whereas if you smacked an old mean lady with a frying pan, that sort of context, you know.
Well, they're both kind of transgressive. I guess that was my point. It's funny because you compare it against reality.
Sure.
Against normal social behavior.
Sure, sure. And I guess I feel like in a lot of the so weird, so random, so quirky stuff that I have taken in, be it games or movies or books or whatever, a lot of times that's what they're missing. They're missing the core reality.
Are we overdue for some super chats, do you think?
We probably are. That's what we usually go to after we've made our point. So let's do that.
Right. Well, we've made our point several times, so let's get started.
I just hope all the games.
All the games, thanks to the $4.99, who asks, do Papers, Please and Return of the Obra Dinn qualify as quirky games? Also, would you say an auteur director is a key factor for a game's success? I'd say Papers, Please is quirky. It's not. It's kind of depressing. I mean, when I say quirky, and when I think of quirky in the context of Earthbound, I always think of the charming quality of quirk.
Is there a word, I ask you as the wordsmith here, is there a word for something like quirky but on the depressing scale?
Surreal?
Ooh, maybe.
Yeah, there is certainly a surreal element to those two games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Duffy. I would say yes. Well, there's a down quirk, I guess.
I'd say quirky is surreal in a positive context. When you say quirky, it's like meant in a positive sense. It means surreal, but specifically in a good way. So generally surreal, strange, otherworldly, yeah, has a sort of slightly negative context.
Okay, sure. So then on the other side of the coin, I think both of them fall on that scale as you slowly delve into the dystopia that is Papers, Please, or as you slowly delve into the incredible story that is Obra Dinn.
The nightmarish story, yes, of the Obra Dinn. Also, would we say an auteur director is a key factor for game success? Well, I'd say so, but specifically in indie sectors, sure. Someone taking control and telling the story they want to tell.
No, I like teamwork in general, and so I don't think it's key to someone's to a success. I don't think you need an auteur. I think
it might be in the context of quirky games.
It might be. I would like to believe that an entire team could get on the same path. That's my more my hope than anything. Is that there is room in this for a team to work together to achieve the same goal.
Well, it's all about having strong leadership skills, I suppose.
Right. And so then where's that gray area between like an auteur and just a good boss?
Hmm. Well, if you let everyone have a say, you end up with sort of a kitchen sink committee designed sort of feel.
Sure.
That that can often make a game seem anodyne.
Okay.
It can seem overly broad. I think if you focus it through one person's perspective, it adds a bit more intrigue, perhaps.
Then that gets into kind of the minutia of what an auteur actually is. Like, I agree with that sentiment.
If you ask me, an auteur is someone is on a design team, and when the design team is when someone on the design team says, "What if we do this?" The auteur is the person who says, "No, bad idea. That doesn't work. Shut up." Whereas in a lot of design teams, everyone just goes, that does sound like quite an interesting idea. Let's see if we can work that in. Namby-pamby, mealy-mouth.
You have a much looser definition of auteur than I do then. So by that definition, though, I agree with you. You do need someone who is steering the ship.
All right. Thanks for the questions, all the games. Mm-hmm. I'm not Greg Graffin gives 549 euros.
That sounds like exactly like something Greg Gaffin would say. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Well, that's not our place to say. Who asks, not video game related, but any tips for getting kinks out of your back? Any member of the kinks is in your back, I'd start by asking them to leave.
Politely, they are older now.
Yes. I'd say I appreciate their contribution to the 60s British invasion sound, but that's no excuse for standing on my spine.
I think that's fair. On a more accurate thing, daily stretches and back strengthening exercises.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Straight Man.
I wanted to start there, and then you move on to the joke because we just talked about setup and punchline, Yahtzee, but we inverted it. We subverted your expectations there.
There you go. That's our quirk.
You can find YouTube videos on proper back stretches and do some back strengthening exercises, because if you have proper muscles back there, you will get back aches less often.
More Robot Wars content donates £5 to say, you guys wore me down and I made an effort to have my Dark Souls epiphany. Completed a few days ago. It's definitely quirky. Hashtag relevant. Hashtag stretch.
Very much a stretch. Very, very much a stretch.
Well, that's certainly something I'd classify more as surreal than quirky.
Oh, no. I can't. I've already used my daily Dark Souls quotient, so I can't talk about it anymore.
All right, moving hastily on.
Thank you.
Someone whose name is just CK and then an interrobang, the question mark, exclamation mark, gives US $10 to say, I've nothing constructive to add. Thanks for all you guys make. Loves. Heart. Icon.
Fantastic.
You're welcome, CK interrobang. Ice Age 70, it just says welcome to Tip Jar, so I guess they have just...
Thanks for the support, we appreciate it.
Given a tip
that.
With no real comment, thanks very much. Oh, hang on, missed my place. There we go. Benjamin Wilson gives $5 Canadian to ask, are there any of the games you guys named Game of the Year that you don't think aged well or changed your mind about? Well, what have I said as Game of the Year? I once said Shadow of Mordor was my Game of the Year. I guess that was still all right. I guess it's kind of soured now. Every game is an Assassin's Creed clone. Because that was sort of early on in that trend.
Like a little Assassin's Creed, a little crowd control combat.
Yeah, but I do still like the unique, you know... Nemesis system that game introduced,
and it's always fun just to hang out in Lord of the
Rings. I think it's a really good demonstration of the fact that you can have your baseline that's just an Assassin's Creed ripoff, but you got to have some interesting, unique selling point on top of that.
Yeah, yeah. I think like any like looking back on game of the year, it's so nebulous because obviously it's just game of that year in that time in that mind frame, right?
Yeah.
So
it's just the best game that came out that year, and if it's a shorter year, as they so often are,
right,
then it probably doesn't hold up to analysis in this context of one of the best games ever.
Right.
Like, I think BioShock Infinite was one of my games of the year.
Oh, okay.
In retrospect, it was kind of a shitty year. I think I'd definitely want to like replay that game before I said anything further. But
yeah, that'd be an interesting
possible path. It might not have aged so well.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Well, there you go.
Stephen Shah gives US $2 to say, would you consider Narita Boy to be a quirky game? I have played that. That came out fairly recently.
Oh, okay.
I'd say it's more of a confusing game.
Oh.
I mean, I started it. I mean, I played it once for a few like minutes. I started it. It started throwing like concept after concept at me. And I just felt completely overwhelmed.
Sure.
Like, you are in a computer world, and now you must go into the world of the blah and do the blah, and here is a blah, and it represents blah.
So
it completely lacked the anchor we're talking about, I suppose.
Well, and I guess that was going to be my follow-up question is, like, did it lack the anchor, or did it just not do a proper job of setting it up? Was it too fast a ramp-up?
Yeah, it didn't set itself up properly,
okay,
to my mind. All right, Aditya gives 100 rupees to say, hi, Artsy, we rarely hear you mention the GBA on ZP. Any favorite games? How do you feel about Hamtaro Ham Ham Heartbreak?
That's the important question.
I think I saw my wife playing that once, actually. GBA, quite a strong showing in terms of games.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of good Zeldas on there, like Minish Cap.
Oh, yeah.
My personal favorite GBA game would probably be Castlevania Aria of Sorrow.
Mm-hmm. A fine, fine game.
Which is a very good Castlevania game that introduced the concept of absorbing one ability from every individual monster.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Which is a fun way of cataloging the monsters that came back in Bloodstained, which was like a sort of grab bag of all the good features of Castlevania games.
Great games.
So,
great games. GBA was full of great games. You got your Pokemons, all full of the Pokemons on them.
Did you have a particular favorite GBA game?
Probably one of the... I mean, if we're talking just hours put in, it was probably a Pokemon's.
Fair enough.
But Minish Cap was a phenomenal... Like, I want to... Like, all of these Zelda handheld games, I feel are cast off as second thoughts in the Zelda universe, and every single one of them was amazing.
Hmm.
So, give them a shot, people.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Dragon gives 10 I almost said 10 Californian dollars there. 10 Canadian dollars.
Been playing a little too much Fallout.
Possibly. He says, Jimmy and the Pulsating Mass by Casey Ozmi would be my favorite Earthbound-inspired game. The idea of exploring the innocent dreams and terror-filled nightmares of an 8-year-old makes for a wonderful game.
Mm.
Well, I haven't played it, but it certainly does sound Earthbound-inspired just from that title.
Sure.
Jimmy and the Pulsating Mass. I mean, that could practically be a title, an alternative title of Earthbound.
Well, you know, like thinking I've been trying to like dip into more modern games that take this core idea of Earthbound, and like, you know, stuff that comes to mind is, you know, possibly like the Stanley Parable. Is, you know, a game that deconstructs how we think about games, even something like the storytelling in Portal. This is a real stretch here, but I think there's a line.
I agree.
We get quirky characters, fun characters, and we get a unique way to tell a story.
Hmm. That is, I can certainly see the link between Earthbound and Stanley Parable,
mm-hmm.
and by extension, Portal.
Hmm. Great.
All right. Diego Lomac gives $5 to say, probably no way to make a quirky AAA game not being unbearably smug. I remember attempts such as Sunset Overdrive. Also, $R is reals from Brazil. Oh, thank you.
Oh.
Yeah, I agree. Sunset Overdrive was a AAA attempt at the quirky auteur vibe, and it just came across as smug.
Does quirky... Go ahead.
What I remember distinctly about that game is that they're trying to bring across the character as, you know, a sort of free-spirited rebel. Mm-hmm. And at one point, the way they bring that across is to have them wax lyrical on rock and roll music. Saying, you don't like rock and roll? I'll have to introduce you to the wonders of rock and roll. And it really did feel like a room full of 36-year-olds writing about how the kids write. Think about what the kids like.
Yeah, they listen to rock and roll music, right? Is that what kids still listen to now?
They like rock and roll, and they do graffiti on their skateboard.
You can tell that they grew up in the 80s. I think that's beautiful. Mm. My question there was, is there an inherent underdog characteristic to the quirky genre?
Well, as we say, it's an inherently auteur thing, really, because you don't have to explain yourself to a manager. Sunset Overdrive feels like a game where every aspect of it had to be explained to the publisher.
Yes.
And they had to sign off on it.
Yes, like they had to personally explain to Bill Gates why rollerblading was still cool. Yeah.
All right. Alizura, welcome to the tip jar. Mm-hmm. No good question there. Touch of Madness says, gives $5 to ask, could a base for quirky within a game be something surreal within the context of the world rules already established? I guess.
Could a base for a... Say that again, please.
Could a base for quirkiness within a game be something surreal within the context of the established world rules?
Yes. Actually, that would be that would be an interesting experiment.
Start a game with quirkiness and then do something straight in the middle of it.
Like, what if the anchor to the game was its bizarre? Like, but you know, you have to make it cohesive. That's what we've talked about, right? It has to be a cohesive world. Yeah. But what if, like, the anchor is this bizarro world, and you start to get used to the bizarro world, but then the real world starts creeping in, and that's what makes it quirky.
I would argue that's a lot of what Undertale did. They keep you in this surreal, bizarre world until you get used to it. Mm-hmm. And then I would say on the path to the good ending, where you go into the horror laboratory and find all the twisted experiments, that's where it sort of takes it onto another angle.
Ooh, sure, sure. I like
that. Would like a surreal moment within an already quirky game.
Okay, I like that. I like that. Right. But yeah, the answer is, as long as your base reality is cohesive, you can do whatever you want from there.
Yes, that's the point. Mm. Undertale, as we say, it's a very cohesive base reality. It's got verisimilitude.
Ooh, dang, you said it.
I love that
Count
word.
Count it.
Leonard Steikerbikes Suikelos Koiken gives €5. Sorry for how I pronounced that, and generally for everything. Speaking of quirky games, glad Jack gave Professor Layton the respect he deserves 2 weeks ago. I had a fangasm so big I painted a house white.
Oh, with his semen. I get it.
With his cum, yes. It took a few moments.
It took a little bit. I mean, yes, Professor Layton's a great game. Fantastic game.
And I would argue cum couldn't paint a house white. It would just get sort of like gray and damp, my wallpaper paste.
Yeah.
But let's not analyze that any further. Dazumaya gives $5 to say, howdy, have you ever played One Shot? If so, what are your thoughts on it? No, I haven't. Sorry.
I'm looking it up now. One Shot game. Have I played this? This sounds like something I would play. No, I haven't. Sorry.
Well, it certainly has a earthboundy sort of amateurish look to it, just from the immediate look. Yes, I haven't played that. Sorry. Hmm. SK gives £5 to say, happy that Escape is still around. What are your thoughts on the balance of gameplay and story and game design? Does one restrict the other? Only if you let it. I think the best games have always been the ones that integrate gameplay and story together really well. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much considering them as separate things, like here's a chunk of gameplay and here's a chunk of story. Let's just put one next to the other. Mm. About figuring out a way to work it all together, like the way something like the Stanley Parable does.
Ooh.
or The Return of the Obra Dinn, of course, where you have to unlock the story through the mechanics of completing a bunch of logic puzzles.
Yahtzee, you're so wise. You're so wise and handsome. And I think, like, you just said something so profound that everyone should take a moment and understand the thing you just said, which is stop thinking about story and gameplay as separate entities. And I think that that's the real problem. For people, you know, like people who are too story focused on games and have a little bit of gameplay, they should not exist separately. It is one thing.
Yeah. Let's listen to audio logs over gameplay, you bastards, instead of making us sit on the menu screen until you've played the whole thing. Yeah. Then just fade out a cutscene after every combat arena like it's fucking Gears of War.
Right. Bring the story into the game. Bring the game into the story. It's all one big soup, baby.
Ice Age 70 gives $5. Looks like this will be the last one.
Hmm.
To say Lisa the Painful, I'd said, is one of the better but less known Earthbound-inspired games. I think it's fairly well known.
Hmm.
I haven't played through it. I started it, but I guess something else distracted me. Perhaps it was this adorable dog who's in my gown. I'm having a bit of a yawn.
Toffee.
Yes, I know by reputation. Seems a bit depressing, actually. I've seen some video essays about it as well.
Hmm. Great.
Oh, we just got two super chats in. No more after this, please. We need to wrap this up, and I need to walk this dog. Another donation from Leonard Soikerboiks Sukelos Koiken.
Wow.
Who gives €5 to say, I recommend One Shot. It combines the doomed world atmosphere with Undertale's meta-narrative and quirky characters. It broke my heart with a few lines. Hmm. Well, perhaps I will check it out. I ain't much else to play this week besides that new Oddworld game. I already started it, and I kind of hate it. So perhaps I'll have the time.
Speaking of quirky.
And one last comment from Rationally Upset, who gives $4.99 to say Disco Elysium definitely borders on the surreal at times. Is that Elysium or Elysium? I'm never sure.
I've always heard it as Elysium, but that's just me.
That's probably right.
That's just me.
I just went say Elysium based on how it was spelled.
Sure. You have played Disco Elysium. I have not. Does it border on the quirky or surreal end of the spectrum?
I'd say it does a hell of a lot more than border on the surreal for a lot of it.
Okay.
And this is a game where every aspect of your personality has its own voice.
Oh.
It's definitely worth playing.
It's on my list.
I know you don't like story games with lots of reading.
Yeah. No, it's on my list. I'm waiting. I think that could be a really good pick up and play game. So I'm waiting for the Switch release, which is supposed to come out sometime this year. Because I think I would like to play that in small chunks kind of throughout the week. And right there at the toffee bell, if you heard the flappity daps of Toffee's ears, that means it's time to wrap this up. As a reminder, for everyone, there are YouTube memberships available to you. They help us support shows like this and this very show. You can become an Escapist Plus member, which helps us do things like have extended conversations about what is quirky without having to worry about chasing that dang old algorithm.
Sure is nice.
It sure is. And yes, so make sure you look into that to help support us make our own weird, quirky things here at The Escapist.
And remember, if you don't like Escapist site personally, you could always get a YouTube membership and then you can never have to see us again. And you can see all the videos a week ahead of everyone else.
Boom. So exciting. And you get fun things in the chat here where we can see your name easier. Thanks, everybody, for watching and or listening to this later. Once again, I've been Jack Packard.
I was Yahtzee Croshaw. You can follow me on Twitter, at Yahtzee Croshaw. Nick is mentioning in the chat that there's a throwback stream of Perfect Dark happening today at 3 p.m. If you want 3 p.m. Central Time, if you're interested in that.
And a
Monster Hunter Rise live stream on the Switch channel tonight at 8 p.m. Central Time. So plenty of entertainment to stave off the existential horror of life.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming. Bye, everyone.
See ya. See you next time.